gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the just couldn't be bothered of free speech, because I just couldn't be bothered to think of something original today. But we are going to speak freely, so that's the main thing. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage. You know how to do it. All right, today is our day. Well, yesterday was our day for Mark Collett, but sometimes things just don't work out. So today is our day for Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. Sorry I couldn't make it yesterday. I had the exciting duty of taking my daughter to ballet instead. So, but I am here now to make good on my regular obligations. So hopefully it'll be a good show.
Yeah, that's okay. As it turned out, I couldn't have done it anyway myself. So, on a previous show a week or two ago, we were talking about anti-immigration rallies that seem to be spontaneously occurring in some British cities. And in the meantime, I saw something about a seemingly astroturfed pro-immigration rally that took place in, was it Dublin in Ireland? So how are these things going? What's going on over there?
Well, it's very interesting, because in the UK, let's talk the British Isles, actually, to include an island. There is a huge uprising of normal people who are absolutely sick of what is going on. They're absolutely sick of what's going on. And they want change, and they want change now. So most of these demonstrations are just local people rising up and saying, enough is enough. We are done. We don't want this. We don't want these people coming here. We don't want these people in our communities. We don't want these people doing what they've been doing, as in sort of harassing girls, sometimes, you know, raping, sexually assaulting girls. And it's time that people took a stand. And this is something that the establishment are absolutely terrified of, because some of these events, I was at one on Saturday that my organization, Patriotic Alternative, helped to set up and get going. I'm not taking all the credit from it. There was a wonderful local guy called Scott who did the groundwork with the locals. We turned up, we provided a stage, we provided amplifications, speakers, banners, placards, and all the rest. And, you know, obviously our game plan was to, you know, raise the bar at these events, get people heard, and, you know, bring people together in a public place where they could air their grievances and their views. And this is happening all over, you know, with or without our help, with or without our help. This is happening all over the UK now. People are absolutely sick of what's going on. And it's also happening in Ireland as well. So, you know, all over the British Isles, people are rising up. However, yes, you're right. There are astroturfed sort of leftist counter demos. There wasn't actually on Saturday in Skegness where we had our demo. There was no counter demonstration. There was the left simply weren't there. There was 400 to 500, you know, people out there, you know, protesting against mass immigration, but there wasn't any response. But elsewhere, there has been a response. And in some places, there has been these big astroturfed counter demonstrations to make out as if people want these migrants pouring in, which they absolutely don't. You know, there is a clear move here where people are saying, look, we don't want this. We don't want these people in our country. We are basically, you know, overwhelmed now. Britain is full. And, you know, there are certain things that you're allowed to talk about. So the media will talk about things like, oh, well, there are too many migrants coming in and we're living through a cost of living crisis. And, you know, they're getting billions of pounds of money spent on them every year because they're staying in all of these hotels at our expense. But then there's things the media won't talk about, which is the sexual harassment, which is the sexual assaults, the rapes of young girls. And in some parts of the country, you know, this has happened. And we have young girls actually protesting outside their own schools about the rape and sexual assault of girls that have taken place at those schools. And, you know, that sounds absolutely horrifying. And if it does sound horrifying, it should do. Because, you know, white British girls going to school are now facing the prospect of sharing their classrooms with, I would say, migrant boys, but they're often not. They're often migrant men posing as boys who, have little or no regard for the well-being of anyone at that school and are actively bullying and sexually assaulting the children at the school. So it's a very, very, this is a very difficult time for people in Britain. And I can tell you this now, people are, you know, now ready to do something. And that's why you're seeing these sort of spontaneous events where all of a sudden locals will just come out en masse, go to the hotel and, you know, put out, start doing a protest there on the day. They just had enough. But will it achieve anything? Well, I hope so. I think it will achieve some form of community who are opposed to this. But one thing that's very, very telling is the politicians are not answering the people. And when they do answer the people on this issue, when they are pressed to give an answer on these issues, the politicians more or less spit in the face of the general public.
Wow. Now, in Ireland, there seem to be a fair number of people, whether this is astroturfed or not, still a fair number of people, mostly women, it seemed, who came out to say that migrants are welcome and this type of thing. So, like, as far as you can tell, how, like, what percentage of people, to what extent are there pro-immigration people because it's sad that somebody doesn't like the country they were born in? To what extent are there these people? And the other thing is, right, apart from the simple numbers game, as how many people are in which camp, how deeply do pro-immigration people really care about it? As opposed to, it seems that the people who have had enough of immigration are really, really, like, this is a top priority for them. So in terms of priority and intensity of their positions, can you give us a feeling of, you know, how the two sides measure up?
Well, I would say that what you've got when you see these pro-migrant demonstrators, the ones who are basically calling for open borders and are saying, yeah, let them all in. When you look at those people tend to be highly politicized, highly motivated and politically active activists who are absolutely working towards a greater agenda. They're not just local people saying, yay, let's invite them in. However, when you see these anti-migrant protests, you've got the opposite. When you see an anti-migrant protest, the anti-migrant protests are generally overwhelmingly local people that are concerned for the safety of their sons, their daughters, their sisters. They want their community to be safe, and they've acknowledged the problems that that mass migration brings. And I would say that's the difference. And when you see these local spontaneous protests break out, where you'll have, you know, a few hundred people turn up at a hotel with placards and banners, that is genuine grassroots activism. Whereas when you look at, I would have to say, these sort of pro-migration demonstrations, they're not grassroots activism. They're anything but grassroots activism. In fact, they are the opposite of grassroots activism. They are, put on so that the media can say, well, you know, it's 50-50 here. You know, some people want it, some people don't. And granted, some people want it and some people don't. But those who do want it are far less numerate. And they're people that are given far more of a say than they deserve, because fundamentally what you've actually got is a situation where the media is trying to make their side, so to speak, look bigger than it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there was that counter demonstration, that pro-immigration counter demonstration that I read about, that took place in Ireland. Are you having them in the UK as well?
The pro-immigration counter-demonstrations? Mm-hmm. We are in some places, and that's the interesting thing. We didn't at the weekend in Skegness. In Skegness, there wasn't a single counter-demonstrator. But usually, where there are counter-demonstrations, the counter demonstrations are usually a lot smaller than the main demonstrations. And those at the counter demonstration are usually bussed in. Now look, I'm not against bussing people in, so to speak, because I don't live in many of the areas these things take place, but I do turn up to support locals, to make speeches and to make people aware of our organisation. And fundamentally, that will happen with any group, but there really is no point, doing that on a nationwide level. So I'm not going to be driving around to every single town and city where there's a demonstration. One, I couldn't afford to. And two, there wouldn't be any organic support then. It would just be, you know, sort of the Mark Collett roadshow. And that's not what's happening. With the anti-immigration protests, the vast majority of the people there are local people. The vast majority of people there, have a very good reason for being there, because it's affecting their, you know, daily or weekly lives and, you know, putting their family at risk. However, when the left turn up, the left are bussed in, and the left have always had far more money. They've always had the backing of these big trade unions, which are vehemently anti-white, and they've had the backing of major political parties as well, like the Labour Party. So what you will actually find when you see the left swoop in is these big coachloads of people arrive from all over the country, disembark from these coaches. They'll have very professionally printed placards and banners which have been, you know, pre-prepped for them, and it's to give the impression that wherever there are these anti-migrant demos, there is an equal or larger force of people counteracting those demonstrations. And that simply isn't true. That's something that is done so the media can say that this is an issue that's, you know, splitting the people. And yeah, it is splitting the people, as I said earlier, but it's not splitting them down the middle. It's not splitting them 50-50. It's splitting them, you know, probably when it comes to white Britons, I would say about 70-80% of white Britons would now want to close the borders. And, you know, you'd probably have 20-30% who didn't. And they're trying to make out it's closer to 50-50, or maybe even in the favour of the pro-immigration demonstrators. Favor. And I'll also say the other reason these people turn up is because they know that when they turn up, if it leads to two noisy sets of demonstrations screaming abuse at each other, and if it also leads to any form of arrest, that goes in the favor of the establishment, because when the media cover the protest, the media coverage is always led with the story of, hey, what have we got here? Counter-protesters clash with, you know, anti-migrant demonstrators. And all of a sudden, the headline's got clash in it. And that does put normal people off from attending these things. And if it ends up coming to blows, as you well know, there is always then more people who are going to be scared off. So if you see as a headline, you know, five arrested at anti-migrant demonstration in Leeds, that makes normal people think, ooh, well, I might agree with them, but I'm pleased I didn't turn up because I wouldn't have wanted to be arrested. And that's understandable. And that was true of our previous demonstration in Leeds a few weeks back. The headlines were arrests made at anti-migrant demonstration in Seacroft. Now, that's all well and good, but who were those arrested? Who were the people who got arrested at that event? Well, it wasn't the nationalists. I can tell you what happened. We did everything by the book. We liaised with the police beforehand. We ensured the event went off completely peacefully. And then a group of Antifa turned up. The Antifa, rushed our position. A couple of them actually got knocked down and flattened in the process because they weren't really prepared to meet with a crowd like we had. They weren't prepared to actually meet with the number of nationalists that we actually had there, so they actually got flattened. But after they'd been flattened, the police ran over, because we'd actually liaised with the police beforehand, and because we'd liaised with the police beforehand, we had actually got all the right we've been granted the right to do this static demonstration. And because we've been granted the right to do this static demonstration, any group that came and physically assaulted us would be subject to a dispersal order, which they were. So, you know, several of them got arrested for assault, and then a dispersal order was put in place, so they got dragged off. Now, if the paper had been, you know, if the local newspaper had been reporting on this, honestly, the local newspaper would have said, you know, anti-migrant demo, you know, has record numbers in Leeds. And then later on in the article, it would say something like, maybe, you know, violent left-wing terrorists attempt to attack the event. Thankfully, no one was harmed, but four of these, you know, violent thugs were arrested. Now, that wasn't how it was covered in the paper. The paper led with the headline, several arrests made at anti-migrant demonstration. So that's why you get this, and that's why the system, you know, allows these people to do the things they do, because it allows the press and the media, who are obviously part of the system, to then report in such a way that isn't untrue, but is disingenuous in the way it is reported, which scares people away from these events. So that's why at the weekend it was so great that there wasn't any counter-protesters, there wasn't any violence, there wasn't any arrests, it was just nationalists. And when it's just nationalists, you don't have that kind of trouble.
Okay, so the last thing I want to ask about this is priorities. So, you know, you can be for or against something, and you can have a list of things. Maybe there's a list of issues, and you're for this, and you're against this. You're on this side of some issue, on another side of another issue. But, of course, that doesn't say anything about priorities. And, you know, often you'll get a candidate running for office, and you know, you can say whatever issue you want. If it was immigration, he might say, oh, well, I voted for so-and-so's proposal to increase border security funding, and therefore I'm anti-immigration, right? I'm on your side. But of course, how important was that? I mean, to what extent did this guy can say, well, if you're just going to do yes or no, just make it this into some binary thing, I was on your side. But it wasn't as if he was a leader. Wasn't as if he put a particularly large amount of work. In this case, maybe he just voted on one particular vote. And maybe there was other votes where he didn't really vote the way you would want him to. So, and for some people can be pretty much one issue people. In America, you've got an awful lot of people who are one issue of voters on abortion, one way or another. That is their absolute top priority, which it really, in America, if you were to do a survey over the past 50 years or so of people's priorities, you would find that for probably more than any other issue, abortion, one way or the other, is a top priority. So there's priorities. And so the question is, given all the things that are going on, you know, there's the Ukraine war. There's been all this COVID madness. There's, you know, whatever else is going on in the economy or such and such. To what extent are, say, the people who are going to anti-immigration rallies, or the people who might be reading about them in the newspaper and thinking, well, I'd like to go to one, I don't want to get arrested, to how high of a priority for these people is anti-immigration compared to other issues that are, you know, in public discourse right now?
Well, it's interesting you say that. And I've noticed that in America, especially with the issue of abortion. Now, you and I have talked about, you know, abortion before. And in America, that is a massively divisive thing. You know, that can be that, as you say so rightly, can be the difference between, you know, people voting one way or voting another way. And you could even have a situation where a Republican might vote Democrat if, you know, the Democrat in question was, you know, anti-abortion and the Republican was pro-abortion. So they might even switch sides. It's such a key issue in the US. I don't think that is the case here in the UK. However, I will say this. In the UK, immigration is becoming a big issue like that. And it has been for a while. And the reason immigration has become such a large issue is because people have been ignored time and again on this issue. And I think people are sick of it. And we started to see this with, in fact, I'll start really at the beginning.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new, healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Become such a large issue is because people have been ignored time and again on this issue. And I think people are sick of it. And we started to see this with, in fact, I'll start really at the beginning. When David Cameron came to power in 2010 and took over from what had been the Tony Blair government, but obviously the Tony Blair government then became the Gordon Brown government, and the Gordon Brown government gave way to, a conservative government with David Cameron at the helm. And obviously, as you know, when David Cameron initially was elected, he wasn't elected cleanly. He came to power as part of a coalition with the Liberal Democrats. But back in 2010, David Cameron made a bold claim, and his bold claim, well, he actually gave two. David Cameron made two pledges. The first was that he was going to get net migration down to under 100,000 per year. That was one of his key pledges. And his other key pledge was that fundamentally, and I think this came a little bit later, that he was going to give people a simple opt-in, opt-out, one or the other, once-in-a-lifetime vote on the European Union. So that's what Cameron offered. And we're going to look at the important bit here. The important bit was migration. Then, following that, came, as we know, Brexit, and people voted to leave the EU. Now, the Brexit vote wasn't just about the EU. The Brexit vote was about lots of things. But one of those things was undoubtedly, and one of the largest things was undoubtedly immigration. And when I say there was other things, you know, sovereignty, anti-globalism, anti the system in general, were issues that people were, you know, protesting about. However, when it came down to it, and this is the important thing, basically, people were voting largely for an end to immigration. People were sick of mass migration. They'd already voted for Cameron, who said they were going to get it under 100,000. And as you saw at the time, as people remember, there was lots of posters, lots of leaflets, lots of information saying, look, this is about British people taking back the power. And one of the ways we're going to take back the power is we're going to take back the power in terms of being able to control our own borders and mass migration. People voted for that. Cameron then stood down and Theresa May got in. Now, Theresa May made the same pledge as David Cameron. She said, look, it's going to be under 100,000. You know, we're putting a stop to this. This is going to be under 100,000. You know, I'm listening to what people say. We've got to get Brexit done. Immigration under 100,000. She completely failed at that, just like David Cameron has. And I said failed because I think she wanted mass immigration, just as I think David Cameron wanted mass immigration. I don't think these people are working towards our benefit. I don't think they're good faith actors. I don't think they are doing the right thing by the British people. Then Theresa May was a bit of a flop, as we all know. And who came next? Boris Johnson. Now, Boris Johnson was very, 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 very careful. He didn't make the same pledges as, you know, as people had said in the past. He didn't come out there and say, hey, it's going to be under 100,000. But his message was clear that there was going to be a massive, massive change in the way that immigration happened in the UK. There was going to be this huge, huge change. And fundamentally, that change was going to be based around what he called an Australian style points based immigration system, which was his way of saying, we're getting this under control. You know, you've had enough. We've listened.
Points-based immigration system, Australian points-based immigration system, it supposedly means, well, we'll get some immigrants, but they'll be good. They'll be nice ones. They'll be smart, yeah, and they'll be nice, and they'll make us a better place.
Yeah. And fundamentally, after all of this, after everything that I've said, we've now got another Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, who issued five pledges to get the nation back on track, and one of those was stop the small boats, which basically means stop them pouring over the English Channel on a daily basis. So, you know, I've said four prime ministers in, and those who are astute in the crowd will be saying, Mark, you're wrong, it's five, we had Liz Truss. Well, Liz Truss is the shortest-serving British prime minister in the history of the United Kingdom, and I don't think she even had time to make any meaningful pledges or do anything like that, so I think she lasted less than 40 days. So ultimately, when it comes down to it, I've talked about the four that had meaningful or have had meaningful tenures as Prime Minister, and all of those made a pledge to cut immigration. They haven't done it. Brexit was a massive, you know, middle finger to the migration system. But the point of all this is, what I'm getting at here, is that fundamentally, and this is the fundamental point, the British public have now voted for reduction in immigration for three general elections in a row. And not only have they voted for a reduction in immigration for three general elections in a row, they have also voted for Brexit, which many people, as you know, used as a as some kind of referendum on mass immigration. Mm-hmm. So I think this is becoming an issue where people are saying, look, thank you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent herbal formula. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Enough said. Cammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. TR, 5 stars. All I can say is Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Voted for Brexit, which many people, as you know, used as a referendum on mass immigration. Mm-hmm. So I think this is becoming an issue where people are saying, look, we're done. We want change. If we don't get change, we're going to go out on the streets now and do something. And that's a massive sea change for British people, because British people don't usually act like that. British people aren't usually the kind of people who go out on the streets and start, protesting and, bringing out homemade placards. That just isn't in our nature as people. In fact, we tend to be the opposite of that, which you and I have talked about many times on this show. You and I have spoken many times on this show saying the British people are often far too willing to go along with everything, stiff upper lip, keep calm and carry on, all of that rubbish. But, when it comes down to it, they're now starting to say, hey, we don't want any more of this. And I think that's a sea change. And although I would say this isn't as much of a dividing issue as abortion is in the US, it is becoming one of those absolutely key issues where normal people are saying, enough, stop, we're done. we want something to happen, and we're actually now willing to go out there and try, at least, to have our voices heard by going on the streets and doing something that British people don't typically do, which is, you know, protest. And if British people have protested in the past, it certainly hasn't been this kind of snap. Normal British people don't do these snap protests, but that is what they're starting to do. And I think that is very, very telling.
That is very telling. That's because when you go out on the streets, that means that the priority of the issue is high. This is, you know, it's no longer sitting in front of the television saying, yeah, that's right, that's right. It's a different thing when you're actually, most people don't go out on the streets at all, pretty much ever. And when people do, it's an indication that they are committed to something. Or there are some people who will go out on the streets about everything. It's becomes kind of a lifestyle for them. And you know, like the Antifa people, it's a lifestyle for them. Anyway, or, it's a fad. Sometimes it's a fad. You know, the Black Lives Matter stuff was a fad. But, I want to shift gears a little bit. So I watched, Tucker Carlson's show last night, and I watched Tucker Carlson's show because I call it the tip of the spear of the normie con, the normal conservative. Normies watch Fox News, and Tucker Carlson's show is the one that's the best weather vane of how far things might go. And it's the biggest of them. Sean Hannity has a show that has almost as big of an audience. Some of the other shows have, you know, on Fox have almost as big of an audience, but those people aren't, they're much more, establishment. They're establishment, and you're not getting an indication of the direction that things might go in. Tucker Carlson, has kind of like leadership abilities because he's willing to push in directions that the establishment's not always comfortable with. And he got his, and he's somebody who's been around for a long time, and he was very, very establishment until he got this show. All of a sudden, he got this show at the end of 2016, about a month after President Trump's election and before Trump's inauguration. All of a sudden, he got this show and started saying unusual things, things that were unusual for him, because he had been a cheerleader for the Iraq war and all of that. He'd just been a very typical. The only thing that stood out about him in his earlier career was that he wore a bow tie. And he was young. He was a young face on TV, and he was on TV. I think he was on CNN in the 1990s. He was on a show called Crossfire, which once upon a time had a big audience. When he was on it, didn't really have a big audience. So I'm bringing him up, and over the past 6 years, he's focused a lot of attention on immigration. It was a high priority for him. He seemed to show, you know, his narratives were always civic nationalist, but yet, increasingly he's been able to talk about attacks on white people and, say that, and frame issues in racial terms. So for instance, you've got this, environmental catastrophe in Ohio, and while he will use he'll often use a civic nationalist term, say, well, nobody, the people in charge don't care about these people in East Palestine, Ohio, because they were Trump voters. But from time to time, he'll say, you know, they are poor white people. He will actually use white, and so he's attracted a lot of attention, and he got a base of support. Now, over these past years, from time to time, it used to be from time to time, he would have on this guy named Gordon Chang, who's half Chinese. I guess his father was from Taiwan, and Gordon Chang grew up in America, but he's made a career of being hostile to mainland China, and saying that China is on the verge of collapse. He wrote a book 23 years ago called The Coming Collapse of China, and I guess we're still waiting for it. He would have this guy on, and from time to time, Tucker Carlson would go on some sort of anti-Chinese rant, but it was from time to time. What's happened in recent months in particular is that this has become the top priority for him, is hostility towards China. So rather than being something in the background that you could kind of like tolerate because, oh, well, he talks about this once every few weeks. He brings it up and then he talks about UFOs and some other things. It was kind of filler, but now it's become front and foremost. So last night he had on this young, kind of cute Chinese girl who has a degree in virology and, you know, worked in a lab at some point. And, Andrew Anglin refers to her as Tucker's Freedom Browjarb lady. And she says that China developed COVID-19 in a lab as a bioweapon and released it on the world purposely as a bioweapon. Oh, but accidentally it leaked out into China too. And so he makes a big thing. The whole first half of the show is devoted to China did this on purpose. And then in the second half of the show, he starts talking about a comedian who went on Saturday Night Live, making fun of Pfizer, saying, you know, Pfizer had, locked everybody down and you can't go out of your country. You can't go out of your house unless you take Pfizer's medicine. And, Tucker was supportive of this idea. Well, what is it? Is it this was the Chinese or was it this is Big Pharma? Are you saying that Big Pharma and the Chinese work together? So like the whole thing's, I'm not going to rant any more about this. I'm kicking it over to you. Is there like in America, there seems to be, I would say it's top down, it's AstroTurf, but there seems to be this big push from, conservative establishment to direct people's attention to China. Is there something similar is there anti-China hostility being pushed from top down in UK as well?
No, there isn't. There actually isn't. I will say that the narrative or the official narrative slash the narrative that you're allowed to talk about when it comes to China has shifted dramatically. So over time, we've seen sort of the mainstream media in the UK go from it's a conspiracy theory to suggest this disease was made in a lab to, you know, Wuhan lab leak stories now confirmed. So I'd say they've gone that far, but I wouldn't say there's any particular anti-China agenda from the UK government. And the UK government, you see it from some sort of, I would say more kosher right-wing journalists. So you will see that occasionally, that China's this big threat. And I always find this quite interesting, because obviously these are the same people that wouldn't mention Jewish power, they wouldn't mention the State of Israel, they wouldn't mention that, you know, Jews own Hollywood. But as soon as a single Chinese investor, you know, puts a few hundred million into one Hollywood studio or a Hollywood production, it's like, oh, you know, Chinese are controlling what we're thinking through this acquisition in Hollywood. And you're thinking, well, probably not. You know, what about all the other acquisitions? What about, you know, Jewish control of Hollywood? But they'll never talk about that. So I wouldn't say it's something being pushed from the top down, but I would say it's something that is talked about in the kind of kosher right-wing press, because it's easy to talk about. It's a really easy issue to bring up. If you say, hey, China, you know, is doing something bad, and it's because they're communists, and, you know, it's communist China, and boom, communism is the big evil. It's got nothing to do with the fact that they're Chinese. Obviously, it's just got to the fact to do with that they're a communist nation. That's the problem. Then that is a point that you can make. That's a point you can make. It's a point you could make on, you know, television, in fact. It's a point that, you know, an outsider pundit could come and speak freely about. Whereas if you went on television and, you know, as an outsider pundit and started talking about Jewish power, you would either be ridiculed or the section would be ended immediately. And I will say that I think the anti-China hysteria will grow. It will grow, and it will be something that we will be seeing more of from the kosher right. And I'll also say this. I actually do think it's sort of highly likely that the leak did originate from the lab in Wuhan. But and I actually do believe that not only would it have originated from the, you know, the lab in Wuhan, but I also think it would have been something that was being developed there potentially as, you know, a bioweapon, potentially as something that would be released, or, you know, something that they would be looking into as, well, maybe if somebody else is developing something like this, you know, we need some form of way to address this. Oh, it might have just been research, who knows? But I think it undoubtedly leaked there, but I don't think it was leaked as a bioweapon by the Chinese in order to, you know, paralyze the West. I don't think it was an anti-Western plot. And I should imagine there are plenty of these kind of labs, both in the East and West, that do deal with all kinds of nasty diseases that they shouldn't be dealing with. And we already know that's the case because it recently leaked from Pfizer, in fact, that Pfizer have been doing all kinds of tests and other kind of, I don't really know what to call them, because it's not just tests, is it? They were breeding certain forms of diseases in a lab and getting these bacteria or viruses to actually evolve into new forms, which is something that's obviously very dangerous. So I should imagine that happens all over the world, and lots of governments and corporations have sort of very sketchy programs that we as people would be appalled about and very worried about. But I don't think that's anything, it's something that shouldn't happen, but it isn't something that would be particularly surprising to me or to anyone with a inquisitive or skeptical mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm honestly, regarding the origins of the COVID virus, I don't really even care that much, because obviously, as we've gone over ad nauseum over the past few years, the COVID virus in no way warranted all of this hysteria and the lockdowns and everything. And so I don't really care that much where it came from, because it wasn't uniquely dangerous.
I think it's interesting from the perspective, to me, where the virus came from is interesting for two reasons. Firstly, it does point a finger at the fact that big pharmaceutical companies or big labs may well be doing some pretty awful stuff that we as members of the public should be aware of and should be wary of. So we should be aware and wary of those things. And I think the other thing about where it came from is important, because specifically from the position of somebody who's British and lives on an island, as it did originate in China, and as it did make its way to the UK.
If it did originate in China. But well, go ahead with your thought.
I think it's pretty fair. I think we all know it originated in China.
No, I don't. But go ahead and finish your point.
I do. But I'll say this. I believe it originated in China. I think other variants were said to have originated elsewhere. Other variants were said to have originated in India and other countries. And I think one thing that we should all be able to agree on is that an island nation like the United Kingdom should not have been subject to really any lockdowns, because the disease should never have got here. The disease got here because when the outbreak, was announced in China, and when subsequent variants were announced to have been, evolved and come about in other countries, they all made their way to Britain. And they only made their way to Britain because we have an open border immigration system. And I think that should be something that we always remind people about, because we get told all the time, or we got told all the time, you know, stay at home, stay safe, you know, stay indoors for the sake of granny and all this crap. Well, if this disease was so deadly, and if we all had to stay at home, why couldn't the government close the borders? Why couldn't the government say, look, we're not allowing people in from this part of the world if they're not British citizens? And if they are British citizens, if they are British passport holders, and they are trying to get home because they've been in that part of the world, we need to make sure that those people are then quarantined when they come in so that there isn't a spread. But none of that happened. For the entire duration of COVID, we essentially had an open door immigration system migrants were coming in here to Britain for work and for play. And on top of that, when they did come in, there seemed to be very little of any quarantine for them. But when British people attempted to get back, well, if there was quarantine, it was for British people. I found all that absolutely staggering. And it also pointed out to me what a scam the whole event was. Because if you actually did believe, you know, there was some killer zombie virus on the loose that was going to, you know, devastate society and bring about, you know, something that equated to the end times, the last thing you would ever, ever do is have an open door immigration system. You would lock everything down. Now, that would be hard in a country like America, because you have this massive sprawling land border that would be almost impossible to completely lock down because of its length. But we don't. We're an island, and we really make no attempt.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
This massive, sprawling land border that would be almost impossible to completely lock down because of its length. But we don't. We're an island, and we really made no attempt to stop this virus getting here. The only attempts that were made to contain the virus were ludicrously heavy-handed and draconian legislation that was passed in order to seemingly punish the British people.
Okay, well, we're coming up at the end of the show, and people who listen to my show pretty much know my views on COVID in China and stuff like that. I'm just, to put it in a nutshell, there was a virus research institute in Wuhan. Everybody knows about that, and we know about that because we know in part that that they carried out some research that was in conjunction with Fauci. So it was known that there was that institute there. In Wuhan, in the autumn of 2019, shortly before this all started, there were these military Olympic games where soldiers from around the world went and competed. I don't know what they were doing, but just competed in some games. And there was people from Fort Detrick, Maryland, who went there. And when I say teachers, soldiers, and Fort Detrick, Maryland is a place where they do this similar kind of research. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know, but I think it's certainly plausible that it was released in China by Americans. It's certainly plausible because these soldiers were coming from an area, coming from a base where this type of stuff is done. They went to Wuhan, and shortly there, and some of them wound up getting treated in Wuhan for malaria. What's the main malaria medication? Well, it's hydroxychloroquine, which is something that we now know works on COVID. So I don't know. I think there's enough, uncertainty there that, it's hard to make a conclusive determination. But like I say, does it even matter where it came from? Because it wasn't that. It never warranted the crazy lockdowns and vaccine mandates and everything. But we're pretty much out of time, unless you have any response to that.
I have something important to say. If you want the latest news on the Ukraine war, on the anniversary of the Ukraine war, I've got a video out on my Odyssey and my BitChute. Please, please go and check that out. It's full of information. It's one of my very informative short burst videos on just what has happened after a year of this conflict, and how ultimately it is the West that is suffering. It isn't Russia. How this Western foreign policy against Russia has completely backfired on the West. So that might be an interesting video for those who want to find out a bit more.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah, and yeah, just reiterating something, not reiterating, filling in one missing piece. If you were going to release a virus in another country, where would you do it? You'd do it near their own facilities to cover your tracks. But all right, thank you very much for joining me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Geo Radio.
Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Listen, news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
any excuse to go and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.